Would you be seated, please? Can we even imagine the courage required for John the Baptist to send to Jesus and ask if he is, in fact, the coming one? Because if Jesus is not the Christ, if, as John's messengers put it, we are to look for another, then John will have no option but to judge his life a failure. His disciples, oh, they'll be able to turn their attention elsewhere, to chase after a different Messiah. But John is deep in Herod's dungeon, a mere whim away from his death. There will be no second chance for John, and he knows it. If it turns out that he has been wrong, then that's it. Life is tough, and then you die. You wonder if it wouldn't have been preferable not to know. If I were in John's situation, I think I would rather die uncertain that I had been right about Jesus than certain that I had been wrong. Doubt. Sooner or later, it assails all of us, even those whose faith you might have thought invincible, people like John the Baptist. And from the story of this encounter between the emissaries of John and of Jesus, we can learn something about dealing with our own doubts. I might reiterate first that even the giants of faith experience doubt. Do you remember when it came out after Mother Teresa's death that she had struggled with the doctrine of the church? Some people were devastated. I wanted to hug her. The truth is that we of lesser stature bear our uncertainties in very good company. And it needs to be said emphatically that there is no great shame attached to doubt, only discomfort. The question then becomes, all right, then what shall we do with our discomfort? And again, John is our example. John sits down, and the first thing he does is he finds a way of articulating what it is that's really bothering him, which probably all by itself renders the problem nearly manageable. And then he sends a couple of runners to ask the question, because obviously he's in jail, he can't go himself. Not only that, but since it turns out that the problem, once he's finally figured it out, is the identity of Jesus, he sends the runners to ask Jesus the question, to the horse's mouth, as we might say. Are you the one who is to come, or do we look for another? So John does three things. First, he figures out what the real problem is. Second, he makes bold to face it squarely. Well, most of us just go off and ask somebody who we think will confirm what we want to hear. He faces the problem squarely, and he goes to the right place for his answer. But I have to say that not even John's example here exhausts the riches of this text for assisting us to deal with our own doubts, because Matthew also describes how Jesus receives John's inquiry. And most important is the fact that Jesus' admiration for John is in no way diminished. Because after the little delegation leaves, you remember when Nancy was reading, Jesus turns to the crowd and he pays tribute to John in superlatives. There's no man born of woman who is greater than John. What is interesting, in addition to this, is the actual content of the exchange between Jesus and the disciples of John. We begin to see how closely faith and doubt walk with each other, and therefore how very simple the resolution of doubt can sometimes be. So listen again. John's messengers ask, "Are you the one who is to come? Are you? Or do we wait for another?" And Jesus says, "Not yes, not no, but you go and tell John what you see and hear. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have good news brought to them." In other words, Jesus invites John to make up his own mind on the basis of the evidence. But don't you see that it was on the basis of the evidence that John asked his question in the first place? Remember how the reading starts. When John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples. It's as if John has said, "You're doing this, this, and this. How can you be the one?" And Jesus says, "I'm doing this, this, and this. How can I not be the one?" Fascinating, isn't it? Jesus doesn't tell John anything he doesn't already know. But he does allow him to read the evidence in a new way. I mean, in this case, Jesus has actually cataloged his works so that they would have called to mind for John several familiar texts of the Hebrew scriptures that pointed to the Messiah. It's a little like holding something up to the light, and if you just turn it one twist, it catches the light differently, and the object looks brand new. There's a whole new perspective. There's a real sense in which John's doubts were, in fact, the basis of faith. And to effect that transition wasn't actually all that difficult. To be a man or a woman of faith is to open ourselves to the possibility of doubt. Please God that with John the Baptizer, we may also find courage to open ourselves to the possibility of faith restored. Amen.